This tape is part of an oral history taping series made for the West Cliff Schoolhouse Museum.
Well, I think I'd like to know first, just for the record, your name and your age and when you came to the valley.
Okay, well, my name's Arthur Hibbs. I came to the valley in the spring of 1946.
Right after the war, then?
Yes, right after the war. I was a flight instructor for the during the war.
Oh, I see. And where were you stationed
then? Well, it was during in the Colorado. It was a, well, I don't know what it was, an enlisted reserve deal.
Uh-huh.
And I taught Army cadet or Army personnel in Pueblo, and then Navy in Sterling, and Navy cadets in Grand Junction.
You were quite busy then, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I did probably, well, during all my flying, about 8,000 to 10,000 hours flying.
Oh my goodness.
In light airplanes.
Yeah. All in light airplanes.
All in light airplanes.
Uh-huh. That was at a time before everybody and his brother had a Piper Cub, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. That was early days of the flying Pipers.
Uh-huh. What brought you to West Cliff?
Well, really the reason I came down here, I and my brother landed in Slide after the war, teaching pilots making, you know, teaching people to fly.
Uh-huh.
And I had a little bunch of flying down here. And every time I came down here, everybody was either fishing or off. I said, hey, that's a place for me to So I just came down and started a jewelry store. So
a jewelry store?
Yes,
I hadn't realized that.
In the corner of the West Cliff Hotel.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I was going to ask you about the hotel, too. I'll bet you remember a lot about the hotel.
Well, Fred Lucy opened the hotel the same time I opened my little store in this corner there.
Oh, he did?
He came, he had a store in Canyon before the war. And then during the war, he was, well, he was in the Navy.
Oh, he was?
And then after the war, he came up and opened the hotel up. Now, that had been closed for years.
Uh-huh.
See, the old hotels, he came from Silver Cliff in early days. That was moved down from Silver Cliff.
The entire building was moved, and it was quite a large building,
yes,
too.
Yes, it was. Two-story.
How was it moved? Do you have any idea?
Yes, with horses. They had logs. They put rollers under it. And then horses winched it down there. And was it Mrs. Shebley? What was her name? The old lady that had the hotel? Oh, Joe Fisher.
Shebley.
Anyway, Joe Fisher now, she raised him. And he always told her about it. He said she served meals and they lived in the hotel all the way down from Silver Cliff.
Oh,
took about a week.
I'll bet it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been, well, where was it in Silver Cliff?
Oh, well, it was going to the turn of the century when it was brought down here.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago. See, it was an old,
yeah,
old building.
Yes, I thought it was.
Yeah, it was a two-story in the early days.
And it burned down just this last summer.
Yeah, long about June, wasn't it, first June?
No, we were gone that weekend.
Was that right?
Yes. Oh, it was kind of a shock when we came back home, too. What, living two doors down from where the hotel was, I'll bet you were very concerned, weren't you?
We sure were. We was out all night.
Oh, gracious.
In fact, there's a lot of people offered to help me move out because they were pretty worried about all this block. I didn't see what was going to gain. I said, let's wait and see what happened.
Yeah.
If the wind had been out of the east, it sure would have burned us out, though.
Yes, it would have.
We lost this whole block. Mm-hmm. It was pretty awful. Yeah.
No, we were very fortunate to lose only the hotel.
Yeah, we sure were.
We really were. Yes.
And getting to the fish planting, that was kind of funny. When I first came down here, everybody in the early days, we used to take horses and pack and fish clear all these high lakes. And a guy by the name of Ralph Gerrish at that time was a ranger here.
Could you spell that name so that...
Ralph Gerrish.
I ran across that in an old clipping the other day.
He was a ranger here. It'd be easy to find it because
there'd
be all kinds of records of him. He was a ranger.
I had that in a clipping, you know, that I took out of the paper in those days. And
actually, it was his idea. To fly to the beach, he said, my God, if I had their pain, he thought we could stop those lakes. So, well, to find out for sure, we got there must have been at least a dozen fellas there with the boats. And they went down on the lake and made a circle, see, around a circle. Then I and Ralph went over with the can of fish and porpoises out right among them, see. And they went and checked and they said there wasn't a dead fish and they saw a lot of them swimming around.
For heaven's sake.
So that's how we knew that it worked.
And can you give, now, was this down at Lake DeWeese that you did this?
Lake DeWeese was the first time we planted it, we put it. And that was just an experiment.
And you call it fish planting?
Yes, planting. Well, you plant fish, see, the high lakes.
Uh-huh.
You haul them up, they're little bitty fish, about an inch, 2 inches long.
And are those called fingerlings?
You know, they're
I know so little about this. Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think which is which, but they're either fryer fingerlings.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just little bitty, about an inch long.
I'll be darned.
And so the city ran out of work, so then, well, the state would send us a vision, we'd fly up there. Here was once I had a hard time getting anybody to go with me for a long time.
I bet you did.
And then finally everybody wanted to go.
Oh.
But we planned for, well, to lost an airplane every year I planned to see.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Fly with lights and dump them in, that's all there was to it.
What kind of trouble did you have with the turbulence?
Well, it was too rough. We wouldn't do it.
I see.
I try to think good days.
Uh-huh.
Because it is dangerous if the weather's too bad, you know.
Yes.
But it wasn't too dangerous. It wasn't dangerous the way we did it.
Uh-huh.
And as far as I know, that is the first fish planting from airplanes that I've ever heard of.
I was going to ask you if you weren't a pioneer in doing it that way.
As far as I know, that was the first. And that was among the proudest.
You said that before you got the idea to, or before Mr. Gerrish got the idea that he'd like to use an airplane if he had one, they packed them in a horseback?
With horses.
How did they keep the fish alive? They must have been in large barrels.
No, they had these 10-gallon cream canned milk cans,
mm-hmm.
and they would put them in there with a lot of ice, and then if you got them, if they seemed to begin to sit, well, they'd stop and pour water in at the creeks and wash them. And they, I did a time or two when the weather would be so rough that we couldn't go.
Uh-huh.
And I went from the horses and just packed them in there.
And how long does that take?
It's an all-day trip. And it's a hard trip, and you lose a lot of fish that way, too.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
Now, you said they were packed in ice. I would have thought that in itself would have killed fish.
It's just ice chunks, you know, to keep the water cool.
Uh-huh.
See? Now, when I flew up the mountains, we put in some ice, and then oxygen, little oxygen tabs. They had,
mm-hmm.
they would open the, well, they always used oxygen tabs, really. They, it just things you drop in the can, but it opens water, air, it comes up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was very satisfactory. And up until I lost my airplane, the last airplane, and when was it, 59? And that big snowstorm.
Oh,
I see.
Then,
about 47, 59.
Yeah, landed burn every year. Well, every year we planned.
You know, it's 12 years now.
Yeah. And then when I lost my airplane, nobody planned. We said start packing them again. They had to carry them. They didn't really many do it. They just don't like to do it. It's hard work.
I can imagine.
It's all day.
Yes.
So now the state is flying them in with a helicopter.
And the state
and
does
still
this
now. Now. Uh-huh. They're doing now. They fly with a helicopter and just... Well, that is better. They just fly right over the lake, you know.
Well, yes.
Right down
yeah.
the water, pull them in. Right there. And that's the way they do it now.
And do they do it each year?
Yes, nearly every year. I'm sure they do every year, in fact.
I see. And about how many of the flyer fingerlings do they try and plant?
I can't remember. We put 1,000 or 2,000 in the lake.
In each lake. How many lakes are there in our West Range?
I would say 30.
That many?
Yeah.
I didn't think there were that many.
I had to add them up, but you see the start, but down there at Brush Creek, there's two lakes there, and then over the Lake of the Clouds, there's three, and the Hermit Group, there's three, and Goodwin, there's one or two, and Venable, there's two, and Horn, there's two, and in Macy, there's three. I knew them all at one time. And then Comanche, and South Colony, and North Colony, and Sand Creek. I think we figured we're down around 30.
Oh, golly. And how far south did you fly?
Sand Creek would be the farthest south.
And that's what, about 20 miles from town as the crow flies?
Oh, yeah, it'd be at least that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it'd be at least that.
Uh-huh. Because I know it's probably closer to 30, getting up to...
Yeah,
right.
It's at least 20 or 30 miles. I never even thought about how far. It's quite a way. Of course, that didn't make any difference to the airplane. You see, because that...
No, time, sure.
And I usually figure, well, I try to get, 30 minutes or so. Because, you see, we have to go from here up to about 11,000 feet. Them little planes took quite a while to get that high.
I bet they do.
So I didn't worry about flying straight to them. I flew until I got there. Yeah.
In this kind of altitude, I understand there's quite a bit of a problem in flying small planes because there isn't very much air.
In the days we flew, you see, we didn't have much horsepower.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but the engines weren't strong enough, you know, to get up. But now, Lord, for any plane, you just take a fly.
Oh, really?
But we didn't do that. We had to kind of go like a glider. You know, use air currents.
Uh-huh. And how did you do that? How did you actually head in the basic direction you were going to your lake, or did you have to circle the valley several times and get up high enough and then go?
I usually flew right up to the mountains, and then you, along the mountains you get thermals. See the air going up, and you try to find the thermal and ride them up. So you stay right in the area until you get up there.
I see. And that was a very specialized flying that you did. Did you kind of learn it by the seat of your pants, or did it?
Yeah, I learned to fly in Creed, which is high. I think it's around 10,000 feet. And we learned to fly at a high altitude. And there is a trick to it.
Uh-huh.
It really is annoying, you know. And then your horsepower in here is high.
What kind of horsepower did you work with when you were flying?
65 horse. And they don't even make anything as small, I don't think. I know they do it anymore. Got 65 horse engines.
Oh, my goodness.
And now they'll have 120, 130 at least. Yeah.
Yes.
So So it was a trick to fly. It really was.
Well, it's obvious for me.
But it's just to say that we learn to fly in the mountains. The people that get in trouble are the ones that come from a low altitude up here.
And don't understand mountain flying.
And don't understand the mountain flying, that's right.
Yes.
And then they don't realize how fast that went down.
That yeah.
And just fall like a rock when you hit a good sinker.
Yes.
And you get up in the mountains, you don't want to fall very far, I'll tell you that.
You don't have very far for it to fall.
No, you sure don't. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
But that's the same about all of us do at that. But it was, well, I and Gary just gathered it.
Uh-huh.
But we decided that we could do that easier than hauling them geese on horses. And it was easy to do, there's no question.
Oh, yes.
Or we went, well, I'd get at least 3 or 4 leaps in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Because it took about an hour at that time, I got up there and back.
Yes.
And then by the time the air gets rough, you had to quit flying.
Oh.
Because it is dangerous. In fact, it's too rough up there. You haven't any business going down those canyons at all.
No.
Yeah, you should have.
How much clearance do you have with most of the lakes?
I try to get within, 200 feet, 100 foot to 200 foot. Because if you get much higher than that, the little fish could dry out in there and see from the air.
On the way down.
And if you got much lower, they wouldn't have time to turn in and go in like little torpedoes. See, they hit flat and it hurt them.
Oh.
So we try to get about 100 to 200 feet.
How did you know that that was the optimum height? How did you figure that out?
Well, we just kind of figured it out.
Uh-huh.
And then different ones on the lakes. Of course, I never at any altitude had anybody ever say they ever found it Edmonds. See, we long it'd be rubber boats or something on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
The people there, and they never did ever say they ever saw any fish. And we just kind of figured that 100 to 200 would be good altitude. So that's what we did anyway. And they
yes.
lived good. We do know that.
Well, that's...
We had very good luck stuff on the lake.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of the lakes that never, ever had fish in before, and they stopped doing it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, are you saying that from whenever the lakes were formed, there had never been fish in them?
Yeah, I would say, I'd have to think a minute. There's a dry lake that I don't think had ever been stocked. I know it hadn't. And there never been fish in them. They're too high, see, and there's no way to fish. And then a little sand. I'm positive that I never had fish in it. And I am. I remember we stopped riding Bill Waltenberg, I think, went into that little sand, and nobody got back the first year. That's an awful climb to get to it. And the second year, that was alive with about 12, 14 inches, just a lighter.
Oh, my goodness.
So that really worked. So there was no question it worked good.
Oh, How did people begin to realize of the need to stock fish, whether it was in the Sangre de Cristos or elsewhere?
Well, in the early days, they caught all the fish out, and then some of the lakes, there's lots of lakes that's never had fish,
uh-huh.
I think. And, well, there's too many fishermen.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to fish, so they had to have fish and the fish to stock them, so they started stocking them.
I was thinking that it was really kind of remarkable that up to, 35, 40 years ago, that they would really understand that they were going to need the fish to be stocked, because there weren't that many sport fishermen at that time, were there?
Well, no, but there were still fishermen. There was always been fishermen.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to think of the man Cliff down here, that bunch of boy guys. Now they carried fish into one of the north colony lakes, I imagine 30, 40 years ago, just for their own fishing, so they'd have fish to go catch.
And who was that?
Oh, what's the name? Oh, I'll think of it, what their names are.
Here?
No, down at the cliff down below now. I'll think of them. But a lot of the old times in their days, I think Harry Bickman used to get fish and carry them into his lakes up there. Huh? He's one of the early timers because he always liked Goodwin up there.
Yeah.
So he'd get the fish and carry them in. Mm-hmm. And now the state and the federal government has been raising fish, hatching fish for I don't know how long. But good Lord, when I went to Creek first back in, it'd be in the late 30s, they had a fish hatchery there then. And that's what it was for. I mean, and then Leadville's had that federal hatchery. So I mean, years and years they've been planting fish. It isn't a new thing to plant fish, by long ways.
Yeah.
It was just a new thing to me to plant them with an airplane.
Yeah.
And it was so much easier to get to the lakes with an airplane.
Uh-huh.
So that was about all there was to that.
Did you help train other pilots then after you began this in how to fly into the high lakes and
I never did. Then the closest I come to the state came one time and wanted me to, see, the state has a pilot all the time too.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted me to teach the state pilot how to go in. And I said, well, how will it work? Well, I thought, no, he wanted to fly. He just wanted me to go along. And I said, no, I won't go with him. I'll fly the plane. He wants to go with me. But that's what ended there. They never did. We never got together on it.
That's really too bad. You could have been of much help to them, couldn't
well,
you?
Well, no, they could learn. They.
Well, I suppose so.
Yeah. Burma wished
yeah,
they
had. I think they did. I think they, in fact, I know they went ahead and planned them for a while.
Uh-huh.
But now, as I say, the helicopter's far more practical.
Oh, yes.
See, because they can just fly right up the lake, and there's no question about weather, really, you know, and not. And, well, dang it, the fish, they just fly right up and just fly right down to the water and pour them in there.
And so the fish get a gentle landing rather than having to turn from flat to head down. They did go in head down now, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think it had to, or it hurt them.
Probably.
Sure, they're just like a little torpedo, you know, these little.
Yeah.
Sure, so they went right in. Okay. At least I know they did, and they lived, and that's all we cared about. Yeah. Clinton Cliff is one thing. You know, Clinton, there's a couple of the Cliff boys. Clinton Cliff.
And where did they live?
Well, they're down around below Lawrence Canyon or Pueblo down there someplace. They got ranches down close to the reservoir. I think the reservoir took part of their land. But I do know that they had one of the early ones I ever heard of, and they carried fish into the, well, that, well I'll say the South County, or North County Lake.
I see.
And I guess they got some good fishing up there. But, well, dang it, there's been fishing here forever, ain't they, ever since anybody
well,
came here.
Well, since 1870, and I'm sure for years and years before that.
Oh, yeah. And to say that, well, you have to plant high lakes. There's just no fish in them in the early days.
Sure.
Or if they didn't, all they never
I guess I had never stopped to think that, that some of the lakes wouldn't have, or lakes and streams wouldn't have fish in them.
No, no. In dry lake, that was apparently, there was absolutely no fish in it when I stopped it the first time. And they're doing real good now.
Where is dry lake?
Well, it'd be the first one south of Horn Peak, and then the next canyon is Horn Lake up in it.
Uh-huh.
It's the first little canyon, and it's high, it's way up there. That's a high lake. There's two or three little lakes in the draw of it.
Yeah. Yeah. How did it get the name Dry Creek, or Dry Lake?
I don't know.
I wondered if it occasionally went dry.
Well, I suppose what you're making, if the creek was dry, probably way up.
I suppose so.
So then the lake would be called Dry Lake.
I suppose so.
I don't know any of them. Got their names, really.
I know Colony, and that's about it.
Well, there's North Colony and South Colony.
Yes.
There. And then I don't know, but there's a lot of lakes in there. There's a lot of good fish, but nearly all of them are quite a hike.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That is fascinating. Yeah. I had never stopped to think how my fish got to where I could catch them.
Yeah. Well, now it is strange, but on the streams, I think there's always been trout in these little streams. They're a little native. Brook trout or natives, they call them cutthroat natives. And I think in some of them, North Taylor and all of them have had them for years, I think they've always been there.
Uh-huh.
But in the High Lakes, well, I just don't know. I don't think they had fishing. I know they didn't have in the early days. Uh-huh. Because if we don't stalk them, in fact, when I started stalking, I thought a lot of them fish had very few fish in them, hardly any. No, they were just pretty much, well, just no fish, that's all. And then you take the animals. There'd be no way in the world that they should get to them.
I don't know where the other lakes are.
Well, let me think. They're south of Goodwin. It'd be right up in here. I know where they are looking, but.
Yeah.
You're at Phantom Terrace? Mm-hmm. Aren't they? You go up to them to go to Phantom Terrace.
Oh, see, I see.
From the Venable Lakes, right around the hill there. Phantom Terrace. And then you go around the top of here, as I know, and drop down into Comanche.
Oh, and it would be actually on the western side?
No, they're on this side.
Are they
on the eastern side? All the lakes I've been planning are on this side. Now, there's a lot of lakes on the other side. So there's Crestone Lakes and Dead Man Lake and Willow Lakes. And, oh, my Lord. And on the other side was Cherry Lake and Reed Alda. Oh, Lord, I don't know. There's a lot of lakes on the other side, too. Mm-hmm. Now, my brother used to stop in sometimes from Slida.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh. He would fly
by plane also?
By plane now.
Now, did you receive payment from the state to do this?
No, well, the sportsmen here, we had a sportsman organization, and they used to pay me by the hour.
I see.
$9 an hour was the way to fly this fish in. That was what standard flying was
in those days. In those days, that was a very good wage, too.
Yes, it was. It was good money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. So, about how many hours, then, did you log just stocking the lakes each year?
Oh, I would say over maybe 4, 5, 6 hours. It wasn't very much.
Oh, to stock all?
Oh, yeah, because I
stopped.
Much times I get 2 or 3 lakes in a trip.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, see, we took a little 5-gallon can to the way, straight sided green cans.
Uh-huh.
Then we put the fish in them with water and ice. And then I usually, someone that went with me to stop them would take a tin can and bail the water, you know, keep it circulating.
Sure.
And so we kept our fish in good shape. Then when we got over the lake, we just pour them out. And then I'd look back, you could see, because there was usually ice. We'd nearly always try to keep it cool. And you could see the fish, and the ice hit the water, but they went in.
And there was enough fish for one lake could fit in 5 gallon per
yes. Then what we decided, the lake was, any place up to 1,000, 2,000 feet to a lake. If it wasn't too big a lake, we'd plan maybe 1,000.
Uh-huh.
Just over there, we'd make a lake at support. In fact, you read the lake up here. It was one of the hardest lakes I ever had to get. That's just a little bitty lake.
Oh.
And it's right in the cliffs. And I had to make an awful tight turn when I stopped. And we got about 1,000 rainbow and 1,000 natives in there. See what you do the best. And, well, they just were sitting below and stopped. There was too many fish, and they was a skinny. And finally, the rainbows all died, and I think natives was all that was left.
Well,
I don't know what they're stopping with nowadays.
I was going to ask
you. Yeah, but I think it's natives now. See, some of the lakes are better for natives and some better for rainbow.
What makes the difference, I suppose?
I suppose the temperature of the water and the elevation.
The elevation as well.
The natives done better on high lakes.
Uh-huh. What do fish eat besides fishermen's flies, hooks, and worms?
Well, the flies, I think, the bugs.
Uh-huh.
And then they have little critters that swim around in the water,
yep.
Elder mites and all that type of stuff. But I think they feed from the surface. Well, just stuff that falls in the water mostly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What about during the winter? What happens to a fish?
They're kind of dormant. They don't move much. They're real calm. In fact, I know from the fellas fishing down here in the winter through the ice, in the summer when a fish bites, you know it. He grabs it. But if you watch that pole would just wiggle just a tiny bit, they just kind of nibble. They're real quiet. Fish don't move around much in the winter. They just don't. They don't bite hard. You can't feed them bite. You got up a bumper and just give them a snap. Uh-huh. Got him. But it's very funny. I don't understand either.
Huh. I don't know if you could fish this high in the wintertime or not. I've heard of ice fishing, of course.
Down in the lake. But I don't think anybody would try to go to those high lakes.
Well, I don't think there's any way you could get up to it.
You'd get out of your mind to try to get up there.
Yeah.
Because as you got up there, those stone machines go. But if you broke down,
there you'd be till spring.
You'd be there at spring, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody goes there.
This has just been fascinating.
Oh, shit.
What information have I missed that I need to know?
Nothing that I'm thinking of.
If you, spray.
Well,
spray
yes.
Crops.
Yeah, spray crops.
No size.
Well, when I came down here, as I say, I was given decent privates, different people, like Augie Menzel and Vera and the Crest Boys. Oh, Lord, I don't know, I had 20, probably 15 or 20, give them flying lessons.
Yeah.
So then, after the war, all these GIs come home,
uh-huh.
And they all had GI training coming, whatever they wanted. Now, some could, well, I forget, somebody went to the hardware, and somebody, well, Burns, Pat Burns, took up milk business, you know, with Ray and that bunch. And I knew all of them pretty well. I said, if they wouldn't do anything else, I'd teach them to fly, doggone it. I didn't know what to fly, nobody else. We all thought, really, it'd be more popular than it is.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize it'd get as expensive as God, that's what's hurt flying, really. So, I started GI flying school. I had a 22 flying there at one time.
Oh.
Three airplanes flying around there, four when I used to eat them down with a couple. Lord, we had their full airplanes here for, about 2-3 years.
Okay.
And then when that kind of played out, I decided to do some crop spraying. So, I fixed up my airplane for a sprayer, and I sprayed grain here in the valley. And I spread it to Leadville and over the Sandler's Valley and up a creed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about all that I did. And then it was that, just burned quit flying anyway when I lost my last airplane, as I say, so I just never did take it up anymore.
That was really a tragedy for you, wasn't it?
Well, it made me feel pretty bad.
Yes. Where did you land? Did you set up the Silver Cliff Airstrip and stuff?
Yes, I literally came down to Earl Press. And Art Crest built a strip down there, a ranch down here. You know where that is, I think.
Yes. Is Art Earl's brother?
Yes.
I see.
They're brothers, huh? And Art had a fox farm right down the hill there. Do you ever see all those cages, right?
I've never been. I haven't been up there yet. I'm going soon.
Well, on that, what do you call that road?
Is it Rudemont?
The Rudemont Road,
uh-huh.
Yeah. When you drop down the valley right over on the right, there's a old fox farm. Now, he raised silver foxes in there for years. And he had a big bunch. Then mink. He raised mink for a while.
And those would have been raised for pelts.
Yes, for pelts. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then his brother was right above that, on the, above the airport there, anywhere in Delta Park. So that's when I came down originally, I had to go up that airport. But after I came down here, it just was too darn far to run down there and back.
Oh, yes, that's probably 15 miles out by the time
so
you get
So we looked around and found this strip up here. And I said, by golly, the county bladed, so the county bladed it. And then we went ahead and got a license to the airport. And it's been a good airport. Been used a lot.
I know. It's used at least every Sunday anyway. Father flies in.
Yeah.
That's kept up real good.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, we always kept up.
Whose responsibility was it when you were using it? I see.
No, it wasn't really my responsibility, but I know that any time it needed anything, I would tell the county.
Sure.
They were good. They'd go land it, bring the air for the snow, take it off. It was good.
Well, that's really good. I have heard that it's sometimes not as well kept now as
pilots
would like it to be.
Well, I think if some of the fellows go tell the county, they'd land it. They'd take care of it for them. They're talking now of oiling it. I would like to see.
Oh.
Of course, I don't know. I think it's as good a location as any place they can find.
I was going to ask you, with the changing economy and so forth, I think we've lost a lot of our weekend people in the valley. The people that are buying land now are probably quite wealthy, building summer homes here. Do you foresee small planes flying to pick up in this area in the next few years, maybe?
Yes, they undoubtedly will, because there are people flying more all the time. The only kick with flying, you see, when I bought the flight of the airplanes, $2,000 or $3,000, you could buy a pretty good airplane.
And what are they now?
I would say that you couldn't even possibly touch the cheapest airplane built for less than about $10,000 or $12,000.
Oh my God.
Now that'd be the cheapest thing
that's
built.
That's really prohibitive then, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and just a used airplane. Thousands. I mean, it's just too much. Of course, I don't know. According to money, though, money was harder to get then than it is now. So maybe
they
didn't do
that.
Have
enough of it floating around now.
Yes.
Some people
yeah.
do, yes.
I don't know what. I thought airplanes would become more popular. Yes, I definitely. My thought, I think some 30 some here got some of them cleared with commercial license. I thought certainly they would go ahead, you know, some of them.
Yes.
But as far as I know, well, I'll take it back. Ivan Bowers, he took up, and then his boy is an airline pilot now, and he undoubtedly got it through Ivan.
Well, yeah.
And different ones, I suppose some of them have gained something by it. But
I'm not familiar with small planes at all, and they've always frightened me, I guess, because I don't know about them, and you hear of such horrible things happening. And I had understood from people who were not much more informed than I was that it was pretty dangerous to fly in this area because of the altitude, because of the proximity of the mountains and the thermals that happened when you didn't know where they were.
Anybody that gets hurt in a light airplane, it's everyone's fault. It's not the airplane's fault. I know that. I've looked into it. I could take that airplane. In fact, that's just an example, but any time I fly over those lakes up there,
mm-hmm.
and if that motor had quit me, you know, just quit. I'd have just come back and landed at the airport.
You could have gone all the way
Absolutely.
Back to the airport.
I did it one time with Lawrence Hens. In fact, we stopped in the West Great Lakes. And just as I came out of the canyon, he said, Jim, what did you do with that motor quit? And I said, well, I don't know, we'll see. So I just shut off. And we came back and landed at the airport.
What did Lawrence do?
Nothing at work. But he'll do it. He would not do it. Anytime that you...
So it's all a case of being just smarter than your machine.
Yeah, well, we taught him to fly. Never get in a position you can't make a forced landing. Never get in any position. Don't fly over the mountains unless you're positive what you're doing. And when you fly over, don't go straight up into them and over. Go up sideways. See, work up sideways. And work, never get in a position you can't make a 90-degree turn and get the heck out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never get in trouble.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how you would approach it, to walk up or to pack in.
Yeah,
you don't go straight up the hill.
But you start straight over that mountain, and boy, that can start letting you down, and then you'd have to make a 180-degree turn to see it come out. And 100, you lose altitude then, and
yes,
if you're going down, you can wreck it. In fact, that's why they do wreck it. And another thing, well, as I say, I've seen so many, that Winston Slider that was killed up. Now, that was carelessness. They knew better than that. They flew up in heavy winds, blowing seat down the mountain. They flew up till they couldn't get no air. Then they tried to turn. Well, when they turned, they're doing 80 miles an hour to stay in the air, or if the wind was doing, let's say, 60, that's over 100 miles an hour he was doing when he come around, and he hadn't got speed enough, so the thing just went right down and in.
The wind actually blew him into the mountain.
Well, no, he was going downhill. The wind was blowing him down, see. He was sinking.
Oh.
See, the wind's blowing over the... Back in all winter, kidding, I had to have... Well, spring was one of the most ticklish. Because when I sprayed, see, that killed all weeds and everything was brown leaves. And lots of times I sprayed right by an alfalfa patch. Well, if there'd have been the least bit of wind, see, I could.
There would have been the alfalfa patch.
You bang right, and then I'd be in trouble.
So I just heard in the last couple of, within the last year, of suits brought against people because of careless spraying.
Yeah. So that's what I say. I used to get up at 3 o'clock all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then go up and wait. When it got light enough to see the spray, it was calm, I'd take off. And
during spray. What years did you spray?
That would have been in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
60s, maybe. Yeah, well, it was the 60s because I lost my blade in 69. Yeah. I sprayed up for just about that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the 60s.
And it was 69 when you lost your blade?
Yes. Big solution. 59.
59.
59, that's right. 59.
So it would have been through the 50s that you sprayed
again? Yeah, so it had been in the 50s, yes.
And you were spraying insecticide?
Yes. Uh-huh. Mostly herbicides.
Herbicides?
Weeds. I never did trust the insecticides. They're more or less poisonous now, they're raising that. You hear every day, you're suing over this orange in 2,4,5-T.
Yes.
I sprayed some of that, but not much.
Uh-huh.
I didn't. And I don't know. Of course, that's a herbicide too, really.
Yes, it
is. To kill willows.
Yeah.
But
2,4-5-T is to kill willows, you said?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Yeah. See, 2,4-D is a weed spray, broadwood leaf spray. 2,4-5-T is a willows or that type, what I use, right. Sagebrush or brush, anything like that. Trees, it'll kill trees.
But then
the herbicides, what was some of them? I don't know, they're wild. Yeah, they're dangerous, so really, they can't hurt you. I mean, that's, you know.
Yes.
You did once, I think you sprayed some bugs out here. Yeah. Great big caterpillars.
Yeah, big caterpillars.
That was the only time you did it.
I don't even remember that.
What was it,
I don't know.
Oh, I know, I used diazinon on mine. They seem to enjoy it immensely.
This really killed them, didn't it?
I used to, that was really good for the ranchers. It didn't hurt the grain in any way. And I got $2 an acre. And I could spray, Lord, 80 acres in just a few minutes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And $2 an acre, and it would absolutely get rid of every weed in the field and leave just beautiful grain. It just, it was cheap.
Sake.
It was good for the ranchers. They liked to be.
Yeah. You said you sprayed predominantly grain crops during the 50s. What grain crops were grown up here?
I know it sounds foolish now, but it was oats and wheat, stuff like that.
Well, I know that oats would come along pretty well because they're a fairly short season crop. I'm surprised at wheat.
I didn't have wheat. I didn't. I think so. I
heard
grain.
That they did.
Well, there was a lot of grain here. In the early days, today. Well, actually, of course, you know that part as well as I. But before I came here, when the railroad was here, there was a lot of vegetable gardening, you know.
Yes.
I had lettuce and peas and all that stuff. Lettuce. They had packing sheds down here.
Yes, Mr. Falkenberg was telling me about that the other day, and also Lanny Hansen was telling me about this and about taking him in and packing him with ice and so forth.
Well, the train used to come up here, you know, right?
Yes.
All that stuff out was refrigerated.
But now, now, when you were spraying, the railroad was no longer here, was it?
I was taking up 36.
Yes.
I
think that's...
Yeah, the railroad had been gone a long time.
Yeah. Wasn't it 46? Wasn't it right after the war that it was taken out? I'll have to check my records.
We came in 46.
No, it was gone. 36.
It was a long time before we came here. 36, I believe, was it?
Yeah. I wasn't really sure.
You can check with some of the others.
What was the outlet for grain then? Was most of it just used?
I think they just used it for their own feed, I think. They'd have 40, 80 acre fields. I don't know what the Yeah, everybody had been trying to move a patch of grain.
Yeah.
And they thrashed it, or then later got combines, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't too much up on that end, though. I was still in your weed patch. About all I can think of.
This has been an interesting conversation. I really thank you so much for your time.
In the early days,
I was just reading the plaque.
Yeah, when they started television, see, I was working at Meteos that day, and I knew the television was coming, so I started in to find out. Well, when television came, most of the people in the valley couldn't get it. See, the only station we had was a Pueblo station, and nobody, just a few people, could get television. So I started in building that translator, so I went out now. In them days, there was a wave bender. See, I just went up on the mountain and put up an aerial, and then amplified that signal so strong, and then put an airplane toward down, and down here the picture comes. So that's what started that. And I decided that if I was going to worry about televisions, I had to have some pictures to work on. So that's actually what built it. That really was. That's the reason I built it.
For heaven's sake. And did you switch then from the jewelry shop over into television and electronics?
Yeah.
I got
so I could work on my radio.
Watch it.
So that's when I went to radios and television.
For heaven's sake.
And I ran into a lot of trouble with the state. With the federal government. It was absolutely illegal to transmit anything without their permission. And they wouldn't give us permission to these translators. Someplace I got a letter there from Governor...
Nichols. Here somewhere.
Appointed me as... find it there if you want to. I don't care.
Executive order by Steve McNichols, Governor of Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you mind if I read this?
No, sure, I don't care.
Whereas Westcliff, County of Custer, State of Colorado, an enterprising and thriving small community surrounded by high mountains on all sides, does not receive with satisfactory clarity television signals telecast from KKTV Channel 11 in Colorado Springs and KCSJ Channel 5 in Pueblo, and whereas said stations are licensed by the FCC to telecast in the public interest and are anxious to serve the television needs of all areas presently not being served by any station due to intervening high mountains and broken terrain. Oh my goodness, there's several more whereases in here. Okay, whereas Art Hibbs is a reputable, enterprising citizen of Westcliff and has equipment to boost on channel, quote-unquote, the KKTV and KCSJ signals from a nearby high elevation to the community of Westcliff. The said Art Hibbs makes no charge to anyone for boosting said signals and offers the boosted signals on channel free and without charge to anyone in the Westcliff area who constructs a television antenna to receive it. This operation does not interfere electronically or otherwise in any degree with any TV broadcast intrastate or interstate, or affect adversely the reception of any broadcast or telecast to anyone anywhere. This is what they were really concerned with, isn't it? You're not going to start your own unauthorized
station. Yeah, or interfere with somebody else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to read this last paragraph now.
Good.
Therefore, I, Stephen Nichols, Governor of the Sovereign State of Colorado, in this executive order, hereby appoint the Honorable Art Hibbs a member of my official communications staff and authorize and direct him to serve the people of Westcliff without charge by boosting on channel, quote-unquote, the TV signals broadcast by licensed TV stations in Pueblo and Colorado Springs, to the extent that he has their permission to do so, and to the extent that he does not interfere electronically or otherwise with any radio or television broadcast or with any interstate communication of any kind or description. Given under my hand and the executive seal this 29th day of January, A.D. 1957, Steve McNichols, Governor. For heaven's sakes!
Now, I was only about the second one in the state to get one of them. Later, he gave others around over the state.
Uh-huh.
But great, I get one of them. Yeah, awesome. I was one of the first ones.
You got one about the fish farm, too. I mean, about appointing you on the State Aviation Committee as one of the reputable and more knowledgeable.
And was that, let's see, that?
No, that was for the fish, not for the fish flying, just the flying.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And would that also have been under McNichols?
No, that would be
fine.
I don't think so.
I don't know
where that is.
But that, you see, now that helped me get away, because that, otherwise the federal communications, the federal
office
could come in and find me and confiscate all my material and everything else. But that letter, she gives me authority to go ahead and bring in signals in here.
Oh,
that's how we got television.
I had no idea how it was brought in. I had heard generally that you used to work on the big transmitters. What did you call them?
Translators. Now.
Translators.
It's a different system now,
isn't it? See, it was just a way better. He gave me permission there on channel to pick up 11 and transmit 11. But the FCC came out then, after enough days, and everybody was doing it. See, we was all doing it. So then they required, now there's my license up there, see.
Uh-huh.
Now then give me permission to transmit 11 on 7, see. I convert it over, then it's a translator. See, that's what
I
mean.
See. And see, did you set up that system also?
I done that whole thing up there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
When it was legal, I had to quit my old system. So then I had to buy the new translator. Now that's when it really began to cost us money.
But
it gives satisfaction. Lord, when everybody chips in a little help, it did not do much.
Uh-huh. So what you had was something almost akin to cable TV up here, wasn't it? Except that it was all
it's all free. In other words, nobody has to pay if they don't want to. The only thing I ask for everybody to help me a little, $10 a year, which is awfully reasonable for
those. It's your solvent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I got to be. If the FCC won't allow me in, when I reapply for a license every year, I got to tell how much money I'm taking in and how much I've got on hand. And they keep track,
This is all by donation.
Yes.
How do people coming into the Valley learn that a donation is
people from
necessary?
Word of mouth, just word of mouth. In fact, this last, that helped me a lot right there, that plaque. I think that told a lot of people that, see what I mean, that what it was done. And because a lot of them went in the last week or two and said, Lord, they didn't know nothing about it.
Because I had never heard of it before.
Is that right?
We put a little out of paper 3 times a year.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I haven't been watching closely enough.
And I'm doing pretty good now, but when I was buying them transfers, I bought 1, 2, 3, 4 different things. A couple of them played out, And then I had to replace them. And then that pays a run you $2,000 or $3,000 apiece now,
My goodness.
But I don't dare let them go out. People would help me.
Oh,
I'd have to leave the Valley, I'll tell you that.
For many years, we were feeling the red,
I didn't
know. But now we're not. It pays its way now.
Oh,
well,
right.
Actually, for the trips, I made up that amount. I'd never get enough. Because I would have done that amount as much as 2 and 3 times a day all summer.
And where is it located?
Just 5 miles due east, or that power line, out of even where you see where it goes over the mountain. Sometimes when you're going out the highway, you look up and you'll see a little building right on top of that mountain. Just a little building. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see the aerials shine. I've got aerials sitting around over that mountain.
Oh.
I go to that, clear up, but you know where that new east, Silver Cliff Ranch?
Yes.
Turn in there on that road. They built me a good road in there halfway.
Oh.
Just go in there and circle around. You come around, come right up on top of that mountain.
So it's south of the highway it makes the big turn and goes up into the hills the first time.
Yeah, just before you go into the hills, where that road is in, before you get to that road, you look on the mountain right south, you'll see it right
on
top of
that
mountain. That's it, that's it.
And you said you had arrows?
Arrows.
Antennas.
Oh,
arrows, antennas.
Yeah.
And they shine, you see the sun in them sometimes.
Well, I have, but I didn't know what it was.
Oh, that's it.
It's interesting.
It's
pretty up there, too.
Yeah, it takes 4-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
But you can drive up sometime, drive around, go up there. Can't get off the road.
I'd love to.
And it's pretty, man. You can look over the valley. It'll surprise you. You're used to looking at the valley, you know where everybody lives. When you get up on top of the mountain, it's kind of like an airplane. You can't locate the different ranches. You just go up sometime.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it's hard to.
Yeah, because I've been up in the West Range. We fish North Colony up high, down right below the lakes.
Yeah.
Or right below the breaks leading up to the lakes. And, but you know, you can't see.
No.
Because you're around behind the mountain there.
Well, you get up there and you look right down on this valley. You'll see the river ranch. It's a pretty location. It's pretty tricky.
That is remarkable.
But that's about all I can say. But that is the reason I built the translators. We did have no television.
I know this was true with a lot of mountain communities.
Well, there's a lot of them doing it that.
Uh-huh.
See, there are a lot. Even Howard's got one. And Coaldale, I think, has got a little one down there.
Do they really? What do you have them say?
Yeah, there are quite a few.
You went over to New Mexico and set up one.
Yeah, I went down to Eagle's
Nest.
Down there for me, helped him. But I didn't make it for business. I tried to help him treat him enough. I don't know how they ever did. I think they finally did get one building there.
I was going to ask you if you received any fee for being a consultant on this sort of thing or not.
No, it was all just for the fun of it, really,
But that's fantastic, and you were doing what you really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really important.
Yeah, it is, really. And I did have a good time building it. Well, Joe Beck used to help me an awful lot. He didn't have anything else to do. He retired, you know, and Lord Almighty, he was down here every morning to see what I wanted to do. So he'd love and help me. I don't know if I'd ever got it built without Joe and
someone like that was willing.
Somebody
sure.
had to help me. Don't know
yes.
that. Because you don't want to go up on that mountain yourself and work all day. I have, but I felt a lot better when somebody was along.
Yeah.
Darn it.
You bet.
Yeah.
Did you have to bring electricity in to the translator site?
Mm-hmm. That's one reason I built it there. Well, Gail Camper is the one that told me he owned that. His dad had that property up there.
Uh-huh.
And I was asking him, and he said, how should I get there? So I went up there, and we took a field straight in the area and found the signals. And, I don't know, what did you ask me anyway? But anyway, that's the reason I found it up there. Right on top of the
Uh-huh. And it comes through right where the power line is.
Oh, you're in the fire. Now you get back in.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So I was about 400 feet from the power line. All right, I tried to get the power company first. I said, the power company. I said, now I wanted to power up there. And they just laughed at me. He said, we can't put a transformer. That's a high-powered 35,000 volt. So we can't put transformers on that. I said, well, now we had because I'd seen them.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, it's pretty damn expensive and it's not practical. And they went on. So I kept after Elder Dwight is the one. He was boss of that place at that time, you know, that big shot. So I kept after him and finally said, I'll tell you what I'll do. We'll give you a light plant. You put a light plant in and prove it'll work. So he gave me a light plant. We took a little old sack up there to put it in. And that's why we had so power, was that light plant. And I can't remember how it went along the evening. I'd go up there and put whatever it took, 5 gallon or whatever gas was to fill the light plant. And then I put enough to run it till about 1 o'clock. Then I'd fire my translators, fire my engine, turned it down, and everybody in the valley could watch television until about 1 o'clock.
From 5 o'clock in the evening till 1 o'clock?
Till 1 o'clock. So I did that for, it must have been several months, every night.
Uh-huh.
Every night I'd go up and fill that same thing up and run the light plant. So finally, he goes, and I'll just put it in for you. I proved it works. See, that was
so your light plant was run on a generator then, wasn't it?
Yes, it ran a generator. See, it gives power to the translators.
I see.
Yeah.
So and how much power did it take?
It don't take much. If I didn't take much, it took probably, 200 watt, maybe 100 to 200 watt.
That's not much at all.
See, no, it wasn't much. But anyway, so then the power company said he put me in a transformer up there for $100. I said, now's a deposit. When do I get it back? He said, you don't get it back. That's just our
That's
money.
Just it.
But he goes, it costs more than that. We'll put it in for $100. And then I tried to do it down. He said, no, $10 a month is the cheapest we put it in. So I put that in. I give him $100 and $10 a month in for, five, six years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a family minimum. It runs about $3 to $5.
Yeah, $306 every month.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
And then I had
five
a string wire.
Now, so $306.
And I rush the wire run from there up to the fountain where my watch dog is, 400 feet of wire.
Oh, that's
good. Close, yeah. But that's the way we got it. But originally, that was kind of funny. They said, you wouldn't put that in the light room to work. But they did produce me a light plant.
Well,
yeah, that was good.
Good.
Well, but it made me run up there every night.
Yeah, we were down there.
Yes, exactly.
Who owns the land that the translators sit on?
Olin Camper owned all the ground around it. Now, he had leased. As near as I know, it is BLM land.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know what the deal. I did ask several, and they said, well, if you don't do anything, but if you start in to get a permit through the government or through the BLM, it may take you years. They said, just go ahead and use it. And personally, as far as I'm concerned, if they decide to throw it off, I think they get a lot of static because they get down the valley.
I think that would be an understatement, yes.
Yes, I just think.
Yes.
So that's just it. It's just sitting there. It's not hurting nobody.
Uh-huh.
And it's an old bare rocky knob that ain't worth a dime to anybody. It really isn't, you know, except me.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's what they advise.
So that's what I've been advised. Just go ahead and use it.
Uh-huh. But so, the things that are up there, actually, you own, don't you?
Oh, yes. I own everything up there.
So if you got in a tiff and decided, I don't like these people anymore, you could just take your translators and go home, couldn't you?
Yeah, a time or two when the people don't pay me very good, I would have shut it off. And
you know,
I get that. Man. Because it's all easy to do, don't you?
Yes.
I just go up there and pull a switch and bang, it's done. I mean, ain't nobody make me nervous.
No.
Even the federal government wouldn't. They don't want me to because they have licensed me to run it, you know.
Sure.
And serve the community. But there ain't nothing nobody can do if I shut it off. Not a thing. But I'm not about to shut it off, I think.
Well,
I like
you could enjoy your TV.
No.
Could you?
I could. It's right, it not being hardly as good. But if I wanted to turn my arrows to Buena Vista, they have translators up there. In fact, there's quite a few in the valley here that use them.
Yes, yeah. I've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know there are some people who live up on the west side who can bypass the booster and pick it up
direct
because they're high enough
right.
to get over the green ones.
Because now that was the reason I had made translators. See, that's what the government said. You see, even in the early days, there was a few around the edge that could get 11.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, when I begin to transmit 11 on 11, they get 2 channel 11s, which gives them a coast.
Yes.
See, it's out of them up. So now when I go to 7, that's not bothering anybody.
I see.
Even the bill of 7, so I just not bothered. So that's the reason the government made us change.
Uh-huh. Now, did you receive your electronics training when you were in the service, or is this something you learned as you went along?
I was just a kid when radios came in, and I started studying radio, and I picked it up myself. I've read books on it and studied it, but I've never had any schooling whatsoever.
For heaven's sakes.
And then when television came, same thing.
You must be remarkably talented to be able to do that. I know repairmen who can't fix something without a book.
Yeah. No, that's right. No, I just kind of picked it up. I think first I was, all my life I've been interested in it. You know, and I just kind of keep up with things like that.
When were you born?
1911.
So
June 4th, 1911.
69?
69. 69
June.
I don't add too well.
Yeah, I'll be 70 next June.
Next June. So you really got in on the ground floor of almost everything.
Well, yes, really. That's what I say. It's amazing. Radio to me was amazing when I started studying. Well, pretty soon I began to get that through my head. I kind of understand radio. All right, then what happened? Here comes television. Well, I start studying that. I find I can pretty much understand television. And then they throw color in there. Oh, the devil. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
How do they get the color? I can understand others. But I still can some way or other to see how they can get that color through the air. Now you just think, ain't they kind of complicated? So I just
Since I know nothing, it's extremely complicated to me.
Well, I just I quit worrying about it. That's what I'm doing now.
Well, Mr. Hibbs, thank you so much for this afternoon. I really appreciate
it. It's all right. Is it help you in? Bye. Now, when it goes down.
Yes.